All right, let's dive into something absolutely massive today.
Oh, yeah.
The Kumbh Mela. It's the world's largest pilgrimage gathering.
Wow.
You've got to imagine like millions of people all coming together, all driven by this shared spiritual purpose.
It's hard to wrap your head around, isn't it?
It really is. It's like a sea of humanity all drawn to these places called Sangams. They're these sacred meeting points of rivers in India.
Yeah, and the logistics alone, just thinking about it, it boggles the mind.
Yeah.
How do you even begin to manage the needs of millions of people all at once?
Yeah.
Food, shelter, sanitation, it's incredible. It's a feat of organization unlike anything else.
I'm trying to wrap my head around it. It's hard to even imagine a crowd that big.
Right.
Where exactly do all these people gather?
So the location of the Kumbh Mela, it actually rotates between four cities in India: Allahabad, Haridwar, Ujjain, and Nashik.
Okay.
And each of these cities is situated at a geographically and spiritually significant sangam.
Okay, you're gonna have to break that down for me a little bit. What's so special about a sangam?
So a sangam is the confluence of rivers, and they are incredibly sacred in Hindu belief.
Okay.
And in the case of the Kumbh Mela, the most sacred sangam of all is in Allahabad, or Prayagraj, as it's now known.
Okay.
And it's where the Ganges, the Yamuna, and the mythical Saraswati River are all believed to meet.
So it's not just any meeting of rivers. There's something particularly holy about these specific locations.
Exactly. And that's where the geography really ties into the deep spiritual significance of Kumbh Mela. For Hindus, rivers, especially the Ganges, are seen as sources of purity, life, and a way to cleanse yourself spiritually.
So for someone who's never experienced anything like this, why would millions of people be drawn to these river confluences?
Yeah.
What's the like the driving force behind this pilgrimage?
Okay, well, the Kumbh Mela, it's steeped in ancient history and mythology. And one of the most prominent legends revolves around this thing called Amrita, the nectar of immortality. It's a tale as old as time. You've got a battle between gods and demons for this ultimate prize.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this mythical battle.
Well, during this cosmic struggle, drops of the Amrita are said to have fallen to Earth. And they landed at these four locations where Kumbh Mela is now held. So the belief is that by bathing in these sangams during the Kumbh Mela, you're tapping into that divine power, you're washing away sins, you're bringing yourself closer to moksha.
Hold on, moksha. Now we're getting into some deeper concepts here.
Yeah.
Can you explain what that means, particularly for those who might not be familiar with Hindu beliefs?
You're right. Let's break that down a little bit. Moksha is essentially liberation from this cycle of birth and death, this state of ultimate freedom in Hindu belief. And that's really the core aspiration behind the Kumbh Mela. It's a chance to purify yourself, to break free from negative karma, and move closer to that ultimate liberation.
So there's this incredible layering of belief, the physical geography of the Sangams, this ancient legend of the Amrita, and the deeply spiritual concept of moksha. It all comes together in this one event.
Absolutely. And this isn't something new, mind you. This tradition is, we find it in historical records going as far back as the 7th century CE. That's over 1,300 years of continuous practice.
Wow. That's some serious historical weight. Makes you realize this is more than just a festival. It's like a living embodiment of a culture's beliefs and traditions.
It really is. And when you see millions of people making this pilgrimage, you can almost feel the weight of that history, the collective yearning for something bigger than themselves.
So we've touched on geography and history, but what does it actually mean to participate in Kumbh Mela? Is it just about the ritual bathing, or is there something more to it?
It's definitely not just about the bathing, although that is a very central aspect. But you have to imagine this. You're surrounded by millions of people, all chanting, singing, participating in these ancient rituals.
Yeah.
It's a time for profound self-reflection, seeking blessings, connecting with the divine. The energy, the devotion, it's palpable.
Okay, now I'm really trying to picture it. What would it look like? What would I hear if I was standing in the midst of it all?
Think of a vibrant tapestry of humanity. You see these processions of sadhus. They're these holy men who've renounced worldly possessions and dedicated their lives to spiritual pursuits. They add this layer of mystique and reverence to the whole experience. And you'd hear these echoing chants, devotional songs, the murmur of prayers. It's a symphony of faith unlike anything you've ever witnessed.
This is where it gets fascinating for me. We've got the physical act of bathing for purification, but then there's this whole other level of spiritual practice happening.
Right.
Can you talk a bit more about these sadhus and their role in the Kumbh Mela?
Sure. The sadhus are deeply revered within Hinduism. They represent a path of renunciation, of spiritual seeking. Their presence at the Kumbh Mela is a reminder of the ascetic tradition, of the pursuit of a life dedicated to something beyond material possessions. You'll see them meditating, performing rituals, and interacting with the pilgrims, offering blessings, sharing their wisdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really embody that idea of seeking something beyond the material, like something deeper.
Yeah.
And it's not just the sadhus.
Right.
Think of the millions of everyday people who undertake this journey, leaving their homes, their routines, you know, drawn by that same spiritual pull.
It's that collective aspect that blows me away.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about millions of people coming together.
It's huge.
I remember reading somewhere that the Kumbh Mela is actually the largest peaceful gathering of humans on Earth.
It is.
Like, it's hard to grasp the sheer scale of that.
It really is. It's truly a sight to behold.
Yeah.
Imagine a city, like a temporary city, built practically overnight to accommodate this massive influx of pilgrims. Tent cities sprawling as far as the eye can see, bridges erected to handle the flow of people.
Yeah.
Entire sanitation systems put in place. It's a logistical marvel.
It's like building a city from scratch and then watching it disappear just as quickly.
Yeah.
That impermanence must add to the whole experience, don't you think?
Absolutely. It reinforces that idea of detachment.
Yeah.
You know, focusing on the spiritual journey rather than worldly comforts.
Right.
But this massive gathering does raise some important questions, especially when we consider its impact on the environment.
That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Millions of people, even for a short time, must leave a mark on the local geography and ecosystems.
That's a valid concern.
Yeah.
The sheer volume of waste generated is a challenge.
Oh,
think about it. Like the packaging, food remnants, discarded ritual offerings.
Oh, yeah.
All this stuff, it adds up quickly.
For sure.
However, in recent years, there's been a growing awareness of this issue.
Okay.
And authorities have been making efforts to improve waste management.
So, like, what kind of measures are being taken?
Well, there's been a real push to promote biodegradable materials, organize massive cleanup drives, and importantly, educate pilgrims about responsible disposal.
Right.
It's a monumental task, but steps are being taken in the right direction.
And what about the impact on the rivers themselves? I mean, they're at the heart of this whole pilgrimage,
right,
considered sacred and purifying.
Yeah.
But they're also vital water sources.
Absolutely. That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
The ritual bathing, you know, while it's central to the Kumbh Mela's spiritual significance,
right,
it can have an impact on water quality, especially with such large numbers.
Yeah.
There's been a growing movement to regulate bathing areas,
okay,
monitor water quality, and again, educate pilgrims about responsible practices.
It sounds like there's this real push and pull between preserving a centuries-old tradition and ensuring its sustainability in the modern world.
There is. There definitely is. And it's a conversation that's happening more and more within India itself.
Mm-hmm.
Finding that balance between tradition and sustainability, it's crucial for the future of the Kumbh Mela.
It's a challenge, for sure.
It is.
But it also speaks to the adaptability of this tradition.
It does.
I mean,
yeah,
it survived for over 1,000 years.
Right.
Clearly, it's able to evolve with the times.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I'd love to get a sense of what it's actually like to be there.
Okay.
You mentioned tent cities. What's the atmosphere like?
Oh, it's amazing. Just imagine this bustling, vibrant city that springs up almost overnight.
Yeah.
The tent cities are incredibly organized, with designated areas for different groups of pilgrims.
Wow.
There are food stalls, markets selling religious paraphernalia.
Wow.
Medical camps, even makeshift post offices. It's like a temporary microcosm of Indian society.
Right.
A world within a world.
That's wild.
It is.
It sounds both overwhelming and incredibly exciting.
It is both of those things.
And it's not just about the logistics, right?
Yeah.
It's about the energy, the devotion of the pilgrims.
Exactly. You have to remember, this isn't just a tourist attraction.
Right.
For the pilgrims, it's a deeply spiritual journey. There's a sense of purpose, of devotion that just permeates the entire atmosphere.
We've talked about the sadhus.
Yeah.
But what about the everyday pilgrims? What kind of people make this journey?
Oh, you'll find people from all walks of life.
Okay.
All ages, all social backgrounds. They come from different parts of India and even from abroad.
Wow.
There's this sense of unity, of shared purpose that transcends those differences. You know, everyone is there to cleanse themselves of their sins, to seek blessings, to connect with the divine.
It's amazing to think that For centuries, people have been drawn to this pilgrimage.
It really is.
Driven by that same spiritual longing.
Yeah.
I'm curious, though, you mentioned the Kumbh Mela is held at 4 different locations.
Yeah.
Is there anything unique about each Sangam beyond just the geography?
That's a great question. And while the core essence of the Kumbh Mela remains the same, each location does bring its own distinct flavor and traditions to the festival.
Really?
For instance, the Kumbh Mela at Haridwar, it's known for its strong association with yoga and meditation.
Oh, so it's almost like choosing a specific retreat based on your spiritual focus.
In a way, yeah. And then you have Ujjain,
uh-huh.
a major center for astrology and astronomy.
Okay.
So the Kumbh Mela there is often accompanied by astrological readings and predictions, you know, adding another layer to the experience.
So you've got yoga and meditation at Haridwar, astrology at Ujjain.
Right.
What about the other two locations?
Well, Nashik is particularly interesting.
Right.
It's closely associated with Lord Rama, a central figure in Hindu mythology.
Right.
So the Kumbh Mela there often features reenactments of scenes from the Ramayana, the epic tale of Rama's life.
It's fascinating how each location adds its own unique dimension to the overall experience, kind of enriching the tapestry of the Kumbh Mela.
Absolutely. It speaks to the richness and diversity of Hindu tradition.
Yep.
And it ensures that each Kumbh Mela, even though it revolves around the same core principles,
right.
offers a unique spiritual journey.
You know, we've talked about the history, the spiritual significance, the environmental impact, like the sheer logistical feat of it all.
Yeah.
What strikes me is how the Kumbh Mela is this incredible intersection of faith, culture, and even the challenges we face as a global society.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
It's like a microcosm of India itself,
uh-huh.
reflecting its vibrant diversity, its deep spirituality, and even its complexities.
It's a reminder that even in the 21st century, these ancient traditions hold immense power.
They do?
I'm curious, though, what do you see as the future of the Kumbh Mela? With all the pressures of modernization, urbanization, and the need for sustainability, how do you think it will adapt?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is.
It's undoubtedly facing new challenges in the 21st century.
Right.
But I'm optimistic.
Okay.
This tradition has survived and thrived for centuries, adapting and evolving along the way.
What makes you so confident that it can navigate these modern challenges?
Well, I think we're already seeing signs of adaptation.
Okay.
There's a growing emphasis on sustainability, with initiatives to manage waste, conserve water, and reduce the environmental footprint.
Uh-huh.
Technology is playing a role as well, with digital platforms being used to disseminate information, manage crowds, and even offer virtual experiences for those who can't attend in person.
So it's not a case of clinging to the past.
Right.
It's about finding ways to integrate the old with the new.
Exactly. It's about preserving the essence of the Kumbh Mela, the spiritual core of this ancient pilgrimage, while embracing innovation and responsible practices.
Right.
And that brings us to a crucial question.
Okay.
How do you balance the preservation of tradition with the need for modernization and responsible practices?
That is a thought-provoking question.
It is.
And I think it's something worth exploring further, but first we need to take a quick break. Stay with us as we delve deeper into the future of the Kumbh Mela in the final part of this deep dive. And we're back, continuing our deep dive into the Kumbh Mela. You know, as we've been talking, I keep coming back to that idea of balance.
Yeah, it's a theme that runs through so much of what we've discussed, isn't it? The balance between, like, the physical and the spiritual, the ancient and the modern, the individual and the collective.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as we think about the future of the Kumbh Mela, that idea of balance seems even more critical.
I agree. How do you preserve the essence of this centuries-old tradition, but also ensure its sustainability, like its relevance in a rapidly changing world? It's a challenge.
Let's start with that sustainability aspect. You mentioned earlier that there are efforts to manage waste, conserve water, educate pilgrims. Do you think those efforts are enough? Or do we need to think even more radically about how the Kumbh Mela is conducted?
That's a really important question. I think there's always room for improvement, for pushing the boundaries of what's possible. For example, could we explore like more innovative sanitation technologies? Or ways to harness renewable energy to power the temporary infrastructure.
Those are fascinating ideas. It's almost like envisioning a Kumbh Mela that's like a model of sustainable living, a showcase for the world.
I love that thought. Imagine the impact it could have, not just on the environment, but on the pilgrims themselves, inspiring them to adopt more sustainable practices in their own lives.
And what about the spiritual aspect? Do you think the meaning and significance of the Kumbhalya will change for future generations, or will it remain this timeless pilgrimage drawing people seeking that same connection with the divine?
I believe that the core longing that draws people to the Kumbhalya, that desire for purification, for connection, for liberation, it's deeply ingrained in the human psyche. It's a yearning that transcends time and culture.
So you think that even as the world changes, even as technology advances, that fundamental human need will remain a driving force?
Absolutely, but the way people experience and express their spirituality might evolve. We're already seeing this in the way, like, younger generations are engaging with religion and spirituality, blending tradition with contemporary perspectives.
And the Kumbhalya could be a space where those evolving expressions find a home, a platform.
Precisely. It could become this, like, dynamic interplay between ancient traditions and modern interpretations,
yeah.
A living testament to the enduring power of faith.
We've talked a lot about the challenges facing the Kumbhalya. But what about the opportunities? What positive outcomes do you see emerging as this tradition evolves?
Well, I think one of the biggest opportunities is the potential for increased intercultural and interfaith dialogue. As the world becomes more interconnected, the Kumbhalya could serve as a bridge between different cultures and belief systems, fostering understanding and respect.
I can see that. This massive gathering of humanity, all drawn by a shared spiritual purpose, it could be a powerful symbol of our common humanity, even amidst our differences.
Exactly. And it could also inspire positive social change. Imagine if the Kumbhalya became a platform for addressing issues like poverty, inequality, or environmental degradation, like mobilizing millions to work towards a better world.
Now that's a vision worth striving for.
It is, isn't it? It's a reminder that tradition and progress aren't mutually exclusive. They can and should work hand in hand.
This deep dive has been truly eye-opening. We've explored the geography, the history, the spiritual significance, the environmental and logistical challenges, and even glimpsed into the future of this incredible event.
It's been a journey of discovery, hasn't it? And I think it highlights the power of deep dives like this, the way they allow us to go beyond like surface level understandings and really grapple with the nuances of a topic.
And that's what we've tried to do today, to give our listeners a deeper, richer understanding of the Kumbhalya. This extraordinary gathering that's both deeply rooted in tradition and constantly evolving.
And perhaps to leave them with some, you know, lingering questions, some food for thought as they continue their own explorations.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, I want to leave you with this image. Imagine standing on the banks of the Ganges. The sun is setting over the horizon, casting a golden glow on the faces of millions gathered for the Kumbhalya. It's a scene that speaks to the enduring power of faith, the resilience of tradition, the boundless capacity of the human spirit.
It's a beautiful image.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Kumbhalya. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep.